Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Hey, Brad.
What's up, Adam?
Oh, dude, you know, just feeling real chill.
You look good, you feel good.
Oh, and when you look good and you feel good, you pod good.
Darn right. And what's the best way that we can pod good?
Put Koi CBD in your body.
It's so great. I'm so glad that these guys jumped on as the sponsors. CBD oil is the hottest thing in health right now. You watch the news. Every day there's a new study about how good this stuff is and the benefits of it.
We're one press conference away from Trump being like, this is why my cheeseburgers taste so good. They've got Koi CBD oil in them. CBD, if you don't know what it is, it's not weed. That's a big misconception. It's an oil derived from an industrial hemp plant that has no psychoactive effects. So you get the medical benefits from the hemp plant without getting the high, man. It's a great natural alternative to over-the-counter and pharmaceutical drugs. Now, there's a lot of uses for CBD oil.
Absolutely.
Creams, tinctures, vapes, gummies, which Koi all provides. I fuck with the gummies every morning because it starts my day off with a very relaxed, chill, meditative. I just feel dialed in. There's got to be something in these gummies that also, you know, gives your brain an extra level of coherentness. Is that the word?
Well, because you probably took
it makes you make up words.
You took a gummy before you said that. That's for sure. And I do the same thing, but I have the oils. I just take the CBD oil. I put it in my tea, and then I'm good to go for
You're
the rest
a tea guy
of the day.
Now. Is that from being married?
I mean, I don't know what it is.
Tea is great, though.
I'm a tea guy because it makes me feel good. And CBD oil, Koi CBD oil, makes me feel even better. They got all sorts of flavors. They got
the flavors?
They got peppermint. They got lemon lime. They got blue raspberry. They got all these different things.
They are the fruity pebbles of CBD oil. People use it, too, for pain, anxiety, inflammation. My mom uses the Koi topical creams for arthritis. And she straight up told me, she's like, I don't hurt like I hurt before.
That's a great slogan.
And I'm like, that is so honest and real, and that's coming from a Jewish mom. Yeah. And as you said, they don't lie.
This stuff works so well, I'm scared to rub the lotion on me because I think it might cure my dwarfism. And then what the fuck am I going to joke about?
Well, Koi CBD, all these products are manufactured in the USA with 100% natural CBD oil. It's the best tasting product on the market, as we've attested to the flavors. We've tried a bunch. People have come to us all the time trying to be like, yo, can we sponsor? We haven't found the one we've liked until now. And they're America's number one trusted CBD brand. All the products are THC-free. And it's a family-owned and operated company. And if you want to fuck with Koi, which you should because we do, and we can't talk about how much we love their products enough, the gummies, the tinctures, the creams, the tinctures, the drops. Dude, I put a couple drops in before I go to bed. And it also makes it easier to drink coffee because coffee gives me a little bit of anxiety.
Yep.
Now it calms me down. So I love that. If you want it, go to KoiCBD.com right now. Put in promo code AboutLastNight, all one word, all caps, for 20% off any retail order from the website. KoiCBD.com, promo code about last night for 20% off the order. Start feeling good, start living good, start looking good, start dwarfing good.
Start dwarfing good.
The official dwarf sponsor.
Koi is the official CBD sponsor of dwarves. Can I say that? I'm pretty sure.
You've got proof.
I'm a dwarf. I'll bring it up at the next meeting.
And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. This Saturday, I will be at the Golden State Theater with Adam Carolla in Monterey, California. For Adam Carolla is Unprepared. If you want to come see Adam Ray live, come see me at the Golden State Theater this Saturday at the Golden State Theater in Monterey, California. And then August 20th, I will be a part of the Goddamn Comedy Jam 25th anniversary show. It'll be 20 soon at the Roxy Theater. That's Tuesday, August 20th. And then Wednesday, August 21st, big show. I'm headlining one night only, the Irvine Improv in Irvine, California. I need all my Irvine people to come out. Irvine, California, August 21st, 8 p.m. show. Tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. And then a bunch of other tour dates coming up. August 22nd through the 25th, Rooster Teeth Feathers in Sunnyvale, California. And then Gotham Comedy Club in New York. So many shows coming up. And then I'm hitting the road with Dan Cook for a little bit and doing Radio City Music Hall in New York. September 14th. Holy shit. All that ticket info at AdamRayComedy.com. Brad Williams, this weekend, the 15th, excuse me, through the 17th, is in Indianapolis at Helium Comedy Club. Go see Brad. Tickets at BradWilliamsComedy.com. Today's episode is a beast. I mean, literally. We're talking wrestler, actor, podcaster, writer. This guy just musician with lead singer of the band Fozzy. WWE, Raw, Superstars, heavyweight champ. The dude is just a beast. And we got him because of Brad. Brad's going on his cruise. I'm talking about Chris Jericho making his ALN debut. This guy just does it all. And his story, how he got into wrestling, was really insane. You know, it's a world I know little about, but I've gotten more privy to being buds with Brad. And, man, I asked some questions that he gave some insane answers to. And it's just a really incredible world to be a part of. And the grind is similar to comedy. How he got into it. And the way he's reinvented himself over and over again. And his music career, his podcast, Talk is Jericho. We get into all that. And there's a lot of really fucking great laughs in this one. So enjoy it. Go see Chris live. Got a bunch of tour dates with his band. All that tour info at chrisjericho.com. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram at IamJericho, J-E-R-I-C-H-O. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast. AboutLastNightPodcast.com for past and present eps. AdamRayComedy.com for tickets, BradWilliamsComedy.com for tickets, ShopAdamRay.com for all the Adam Ray merch, my album Read the Room on Spotify, Amazon, Google Play. Go get it, Read the Room, listen to my my album, and then come see me do my new hour on the road. She-Ra Season 3 dropped on Netflix. I am Swift Wind, the talking horse sidekick, so go watch that shit on Netflix through DreamWorks. And email us at aboutlastnightpod@gmail.com. We got a bunch of fun updates and announcements coming and a bunch more great guests. So subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and tell your friends, tell your family, give us a 5-star rating and comment on that iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts. Now that we got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one, the only, Chris Jericho.
Well, the weekend's over and it's time to chat about it.
It's time to chat about it.
Got a midget and a juice, so why don't you sit down?
So why don't you sit down and
listen to our dope podcast. Whether lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of day. So
come over and treat yourself right. It's about last night. Come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night. Well, come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
So we talk about forgetting names. When you're backstage at a wrestling event, do you call Undertaker Taker?
Yeah.
Undertaker? Do you go by
Overtaker?
Like...
Overtaker?
Yeah. Do you go by the wrestling names? Do you go by their personal names?
Mr. You? It's funny. It's, you know, that's actually a really good... I was going to my boss. That's a really good question. So there are guys that you'll call by their gimmick name.
Yeah.
And there's guys you'll call by your real name. And there's like Kurt Angle would always call guys... Mm-hmm. Edge, Christian, Y2J. There's no Adam, J, Chris.
Yeah.
So he would always call you by your gimmick name. Then yeah. There's other guys like Triple H, who was Trip. But
yeah.
Now it's Paul because he's an executive, which is weird for the old school guys like me who still want to call him Trip.
Right.
And then you get Taker.
Yeah.
That's Taker.
Yeah.
Only guy that calls him Mark is Vince.
Okay. And
so,
that's it.
But I could call him Mark, but he's Taker. He's Taker.
And
he's the Fonz, right?
Does anyone call Vince something other than Vince? Do they call him V-neck? Vinnie Mac.
Vinnie Mac. The proper nomenclature when you're sending emails or texts amongst the company is VKM.
VKM
says.
Wow.
VKM says. And actually, in my phone.
Yeah.
You know, you have the muscle memory text. If I type in V, it goes to VKM instantly.
Okay.
Every time. So yeah, VKM is the preferred.
Yeah, because I know when we were on the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, the greatest goddamn vacation you'll ever go on.
Are moms allowed? Could my mom go potentially if she wanted to get away?
My stepmom was there. She was on stage dancing with Fozzy along with Brad.
Everybody had fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. You did the live Talk is Jericho, and you had Rey Mysterio on, and and you would call him by his real name, Oscar, and the crowd would just be like, oh!
I know. That's the thing. I've never called him Ray ever. Yeah. I always call him Oscar. He's Oscar to me.
Yeah.
Or Wee-Wee-To. That's too nice. But so when I call him Oscar, they're like, oh, he's giving it away. It's like, guys, come on. This ain't 1982. You know his name is Oscar Gutierrez.
Yeah, it's on Google, everybody.
You can go and see him without a mask on for about 5 years in WCW as well when they made him take his mask off. Remember that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I must be sounding pretentious, but I actually call him Oscar.
Yeah.
Conan.
Yeah.
Everyone calls him Carlos, but I never call him Carlos. He's Conan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just whatever you do.
K-Dog, but Conan. Hey, Conan, what's up? So it's funny because, Chavo
Guerrero.
His name is not Chavo. It's Sal.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never called him Sal once ever in my life, nor will ever. He's Chavo to me. Chavs. What's up, Chavs?
And then I don't know what Christy Canyon's real name is, but I will always call the porn star Christy Canyon.
I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, I think that's...
But you don't know her, right? Like, if you knew her, they might be different,
How often are your guys' crowds looking for beef to invest in, and how much are you guys thinking of trying to give them things? Like, even you just saying, like, calling him Oscar, and everyone was like, oh, like, thinking that might be something.
I think it's probably the same when you're a comedian or it's hard to say something seriously when you're in front of a crowd because everybody's expecting that everything you say is a dig or a joke or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So I think in that case, they think, oh, Jericho's fucking with Oscar.
Yeah.
But you're talking with a guy like when I first met Mysterio, it's the same thing when I met Marco Stunt the other day. Show me some ID. Mm-hmm. I want to know what I'm dealing with. Like I remember the first time I met Oscar Ray.
Yeah.
I was in a hotel room in Mexico City called the Plaza Madrid. And I had just basically moved in there. And the Plaza Madrid was the place where all the foreigners stayed. And there was a group of us. And some of us worked for AAA and some of us worked for CMLL.
Okay.
And I had met Art Bar, Love Machine, through Eddie Guerrero.
How do you get that name?
I mean, Machine.
For Eddie, himself.
But he was just Machine. Yeah. I never called him.
Someone called Bert Kreischer.
Yeah. But he came to my door and really, you want to hang out for a bit? And when you're 22 years old, what's hanging out mean? Well, it's drink and get fucked up.
Yeah, sure.
So he comes to the door with this little kid. Yikes. And he walks in the room and the little kid's in there and he's saying, F this and F that and screw that. I'll do this thing that people always ask me. Like, am I allowed to swear on this?
Yes, yeah, of course, dude. Say everything. Especially when you're talking about a kid doing it.
Well, exactly.
Because kids are the coolest swears.
Kid coming in, right? Yeah. And he's F-bomb this and F-bomb that. And then Art pulls out a joint. And he's like, dude, come here. What are you doing? We can get in trouble. You're smoking a joint from this. You're saying he's not a kid. He's like 18 years old. I'm like, bullshit. I said, hey, show me some ID.
Yeah.
And he showed me this Oscar Gutierrez. It was Rey Mysterio.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But he looked so young and he was so small.
He still does.
But I'll tell you what though. He's always, especially, he trains hard. Like he's jacked. He's a little brick shithouse. But I remember this. He said to me, I said, show me ID. What's your name? Well, I'm Rey Mysterio, and hopefully someday I'll get to wrestle you. I'm thinking, good luck, kid.
Yeah.
Lucky if you can carry my jacket. and here we go. And, once again, I think probably 2009 had one of my favorite feuds of my career against Rey Mysterio, and he's one of my favorite all-time opponents, one of my best friends. But first day I met him, show me your ID.
Yeah.
I always did that with Brad, but then he had a beard.
I will say the two times I've met Rey, Oscar, it was weird for me because pro wrestling, even when you guys are on TV, it's larger than life. And then I meet Rey and it's like, you are 3 inches taller than me. Yeah. He is not a large man. And then he's jumping over the ropes and doing flips and just beating up guys that are, he had a couple matches with the Big Show, like 7'6" or whatever.
The thing with him though is he wrestles bigger than he is.
Yeah.
There's big guys that wrestle smaller. And what I mean is like Mysterio, he'll kick you and he'll punch you and he'll drop kick you where there's contact.
Mm.
Eddie Guerrero was like that too. You get into it with Eddie and he fights like a giant.
Yeah.
So that's why it's believable because when Rey gets his moment, I always felt bad for the Big Show because if you're going to work with him and he's that super nice guy, super tough.
Yep.
A guy like me has to beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Like when I get my offense, I have to hit you hard or else it's going to look stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's taking beating worse than if I was working against, John Cena or something.
Yeah, because he took a punch to the face from Floyd Mayweather.
And told him to punch him in the face.
Oh, my God.
A legit punch to the face.
Oh, yeah. He got down on his knees, punched him in the face. He said, you better punch me. And Floyd broke his nose. But Big Show will tell you they were going into a main event at WrestleMania to where he was very well compensated for that broken nose because they made a lot of money. And that's what a professional does. Punch me. I don't think he said break my nose, but he said punch me. And Floyd punched him and broke his nose. And then they went on and probably made a nice high six.
See's Candies now sells chocolate noses. Wait, but, so if you have to, you're going up against somebody that you are, does it help to be friends with them? Like anything just for the level of comfort and the trust?
I think once you get to a certain level, like in Mexico, I'm talking, or early days in Japan, like some of the guys are a little bit assholes to you. They were trying to stake their claim to get this foreigner out of there. Gringo, obviously, in Mexico, Gaijing in Japan, which I just found out Gaijing is now similar to, you know, it's a derogatory term. It used to be, but now if you say Gaijing, it's like kind of saying the N-word or something. I said, well, can I... Then I'm like a rapper now. I can call myself that.
Right? So, hey, that's my word.
Exactly.
I can say that.
Yeah. You can't call me that, but I can. But those early days, I remember in Mexico getting into some fist fights in during a match. And wrestling, of course, is a show. You're putting on a performance, but you're not...
But you're towing that line of getting truly...
Well, and once in a while, you'll take a live round.
Yeah.
In this case, it's just some... You know, skinny, fat, drunk Mexican guy punching me in the face because he thinks I'm going to take it. Wrong guy. Yeah. I remember my first match ever for FMW in Japan. It was 1991. I was 20 years old, and it was a 6-man tag match. And it was funny because we went there. I went there with Lance Storm.
Okay, I know that.
And we go there, and it's our very first night. And Lance is so sad. He's despondent. He said, "We're not on the show tonight." I go, "What do you mean we're not on the show?" He goes, "Look, the card's on the wall. They always put the card. Match on the wall." And he goes, "We're not on it." I go and look, and I go from the bottom because I'm expecting we're in the bottom all the way up to the top main event. I'm like, "Oh no, we're on the show. We're here." Kleiss and Runtz for Chris and Lance.
Oh,
they spelled it Kleiss, literally Clise. Kleiss and Runtz, and this other cat against three Japanese guys. So we get there, and one of the guys is a guy called Weta. And anybody that worked with Weta, he was not a trained wrestler. He was a kickboxing champion.
Oh man,
that they FMW would have like real kickboxers and real boxers, and just say, "Well, just don't hit people as hard." They knew nothing about wrestling, but that was kind of, it was frontier martial arts wrestling. This guy was kicking the shit out of me, and finally I was like, "Fuck this." I went to the floor, I grabbed the proverbial steel chair, and I came in there, and I hit that motherfucker in the head as hard as I could. And I remember he looked at me almost like, what's the big guy's name in Blazing Saddles? Mongo.
Oh, Mongo,
He almost looked like Mongo, like, "Why'd you do that?" But he never... kicked me with those stiff kicks again.
Wow.
And
that was, you
had to send that message.
You had to.
But when you get further up the ranks, like in WWE or AEW or Impact or, you know, everybody's cool. It might be some guys that rub you the wrong way, but we're professionals.
You're
not going to go, you know, on set, on stage, in the ring and legit try and hurt somebody.
Yeah. You're there. You got to that position because you are a professional.
And everybody else has too.
Yeah.
Right?
And so was that moment with the guy who was kicking you? Because I always hear these stories with wrestlers coming up that there was their, "Hey, welcome to pro wrestling, kid." And then they actually hit them like really fucking hard. Like, was that kind of your welcome to pro wrestling?
I don't think
wrestling?
It was that so much as A, he was just stiff to begin with. We call it stiff. Like he was, and B, I was a foreigner, you know, in the main event, first night in, and I was 20 years old. So long blonde hair. Who's this, you know, punk ass looking bitch?
Well, sure.
You know, and I grew up on the mean streets of Winnipeg, brother. I'll put it on with anytime.
The mean ghettos.
Manitoba started. I know you were a bouncer there for a little bit. Yeah.
I was a bouncer in Calgary.
Which
was a great,
I've been in Calgary.
A great job to have when you start, because I wasn't wrestling much, but sometimes you would get a call. There's an opening this Friday, or you've got a match in 3 weeks. So I could go to my boss. His name was Tom Kurtovic, and he passed away of cancer a few years ago. But if it wasn't for Tom, I'm not going to say that he really helped me in the early
years.
And Lance worked there too, because if you needed 3 weeks off for a Japanese tour, no problem. He was a wrestling fan. He appreciated us. If you needed a quick Friday off because you got a gig, you know, 2 hours away in some, you know, cattle town in Alberta, you'd get the night off. So you had to have a boss that understood it. Because if not, You can't take 3 weeks off of any job.
Yeah, no. What if his one thing was curling and he was like, this is bullshit. If you're going to curl, yeah, you can have a month off.
That's right.
But fuck this wrestling
That's
bullshit.
Right. And in Canada, everybody's aunt curls. Everyone's aunt curls. But yeah, so I was a bouncer in Calgary.
How much experience just doing that could translate into?
Well, the funny thing was, like, I was like, you know, it was like kind of like Roadhouse, this place we worked at, and they were trying to turn it around. It was funny because the place was called Malarkey's.
Yes, dude.
And they had this thing called Psychedelic Thursdays, which was their big Thursday night. And I don't know why it was called Psychedelic Thursdays, because it was basically just classic rock night. You did Fog Hat and freaking Foreigner.
yeah.
And they would draw a certain contingency of basically drug dealers and scalpers. I remember when I was a scalper. His name was Randy, scalper guy. He would always have all this money because he was like the king scalper in town. Mm-hmm. And it was a rough place, but we were able to, you know, it was just like Roadhouse, brought in a whole new crop of bouncers. We're all cool guys. Don't fight.
Yeah.
We don't want to fight. If there's a problem, just get the guys out. But let's make this a nicer place where people can come and not have to worry. And my job was I had to count how many people were inside the bar. They give you the little clicker. Now, I would always start and then get mixed up or see some hot chick and lose my train of thought. And if I counted this person out. So I would count and I'd come back with either like there's 80 people in here or there's 350 people in here. Someone else would do it. Well, there's actually 150. Like I was either too low or too high. So they took that job away from me. And then my job was to just sit in the back, stand by the DJ booth and just kind of observe. AK just talked to chicks and listened to music.
Oh, yeah.
That's all I ever did.
Wow.
There you go.
If there was a fight, then you would have it. But we were able to clean it up. So it wasn't like I learned one move as a bouncer I used one time in an altercation, the famous altercation that I had with a giant backstage at a wrestling show once.
I think I know this altercation.
Yes.
Am I allowed to say it?
Please, you say it.
Goldberg.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
I don't want to get into the whole thing because we're friends now and he hated me for 10 years. But basically, if you push someone's chin.
Yeah.
Down to their chest.
Yeah.
You'll knock them out because you can't breathe. If I came up behind you right now, Adam, and pushed the back of your head into your chest.
For our listeners, he's doing it.
I'm tucking my chin to my chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can pass. If I just push some pressure, if I get you in
almost
front,
threw up
headlock,
in my mouth just doing that.
Yes.
Yeah.
People don't know that.
So that, and then what? And then
I just take it like in a front face lock to where I'm pushing your head into your chin.
Oh, dude, I can kiss equal goodbye. I'm going to bed after
that. You're
going to
sleep. Yeah. That's my one move, but that move.
Adam Ray is going to be the first person to choke himself out.
Auto asphyxiation.
Is there a career in that?
That's a trick.
So was the one move that I learned.
And
you don't use that in a wrestling ring, but you could use it in a street fight or in an altercation.
Did you ever get bummed that things didn't escalate to a point? Like, were you ever sitting there being like, there's a lack of action? There's too many chicks to talk to. I need some dudes to rough up.
I was never that type of guy, man. Like, I was not, like, you know, I would get in fights if you needed to, but I didn't want to get in fights. I remember one time there was a bunch of bikers came out. I'm going to say Hell's Angels. They weren't, but I'll say that.
Yeah, sure.
Because I don't remember what they were called. Probably, you know, like Calgary's finest with three fucking fat guys in leather jackets.
It was 8-10-year-olds on big wheels.
Like basically. But I had learned, because when I was first getting into the business, I did ring crew up in Winnipeg.
Except the ring. Except
the ring. And there wasn't a lot of them, but there was one show that I went to where Scott Norton was there. He was a champion arm wrestler for real. He then went on to WCW and New Japan, was a big star for many years. Big, giant guy, but super nice. And I remember I was just really interested in the fact he was a champion arm wrestler. And I'm a young kid with nothing to say, but I want to be a wrestler, so I'm just trying to talk to wrestlers. So I just say, oh, he's arm wrestling. And so he taught me the trick to arm wrestling, which I won't say it on the air.
Sure.
Because it still works to this day. But basically, if you do this trick, which is doing this, you can win anybody pretty much arm wrestling match. You basically cock your wrist.
Because
most people will go straight wrist to wrist.
Yeah.
If you cock it, which is not legal,
right.
But if you're doing it with some gronk in a bar, they're not going to know.
Okay.
He said, if you cock your wrist, you'll always win. So biker guy, and I'm like, you guys got to leave. And he's like, we don't want to leave. We're closing. He goes, what do you drink? And at the time I was drinking Paul Stanley's, which I called the vodka and orange juice was a Paul Stanley.
Nice.
Because on Kiss Alive, when they're talking about cold gin and he goes, who likes to drink tequila? Who likes to drink vodka and orange juice? And I just thought that was such a cool name.
Yeah, it's a live album.
I'm going to drink it, vodka and orange juice. And I called it Paul Stanley. So
perfect. Amazing.
And in the bar.
It's way better than the fuzzy navel or whatever the hell the actual name of the drink is.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The screwdriver.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I drink a vodka and orange juice. And he said, okay, if you arm wrestle me and beat me, he said, we'll leave and I'll buy you a vodka and orange juice. If you don't beat me, we'll stay as long as we fucking damn well please, and you guys can sweep up around us till we're ready to go.
Whoa.
Wow. All right. And the guy was a big beefy, not beefy is too kind. The guy was a fat guy.
Yeah. Okay.
And dude, I walked in with my, and there's people all around, and I'm not going to say they were going, you know, go. But in my mind, they were like, you know, like a high school thing. Like
this
high
is straight fight. Up Sylvester Stallone, over the top. You're like, here we go. This is my moment.
That's it.
Cock your wrist, Chris. Just cock your wrist.
Yeah, hearing the voice.
Yeah.
And boom, I did the Scott Norton trick, and I fucking beat him like super fast.
Wow.
And to his credit, they went, all right, one vodka and orange juice for him. Here's, you know, $5 and we'll see you guys later.
Dang.
They all left. Yeah, it was cool.
That's amazing. Wait, so you said you always knew you wanted to be a wrestler.
Yeah.
And what, this tracks back to when? Like, was there a day or moment you saw?
Well, to me, I'll tell you, and this is something that's the God's honest truth. I started watching wrestling with my grandmother when I was 8 or 9.
Whoa.
Because in Winnipeg, there was Saturday night was like, I call it like the triumvirate of the three coolest things you could watch when you were a kid. It was the Bugs Bunny hour from 5 to 6.
Yeah.
6 to 7 was AWA wrestling out of Minneapolis. Vern Gagne, Nick Bockwinkel, that's where Hogan started. Mm-hmm. And then from 7 on was Hockey Night in Canada.
Oh. So if you're a Canadian dude.
Wow, dude.
That's, what do you want?
That's it.
I mean, marry, fuck, kill that line. television. Some would say the Bugs matches were the best at that time.
Exactly.
Don Cherry, so dude, come on. I just was super into wrestling, and
she
was really into it, like to the point where, like,
that's,
you know,
insane.
Yeah, she was super into it,
and she would kind of fill you in on what was going.
She was kind of quiet, but she was just like, she just loved wrestling, and I would watch it with her.
That's awesome.
And she hated the bad guys, and I loved Jesse the Body Ventura, who she hated. And I didn't want to disrespect my grandma, but I was like, this guy's pretty fucking rad.
Like,
I
don't know.
And I was also super into music. At the time, I was really a huge Beatles fan at 8 or 9. And not like a Beatles, like I knew everything. I had all the books and I could tell you who Magic Alex was and what a Blue Meanie is. And so all I was thinking is like, I fucking want to be in a band, but I also want to be a wrestler. Oh, fuck it, I'll just do both. And I decided that probably about 12 or 13 years old.
Like, which is just insane because, A, they're these two careers that when you're a kid, every kid wants to be a pro wrestler. Every kid wants to be a pro athlete. Every kid wants to be a rock star. Then even as you get older and you look at what it takes to be both in a band and a wrestler, it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of hours, and your schedule is batshit insane for both of those jobs.
Right.
So the fact that now you're actively in AEW while you're working on the new Fozzy album and touring both is insane.
It really is. And it's one of those things sometimes, because to me, it's just always been my thing. Like, you're talking 35 years of this. When you step outside, look, I read Arnold Schwarzenegger's autobiography a couple years ago, which was really good. And he told people when he was 14, I'm going to be the biggest movie star in America, and I'm going to be the world champion bodybuilder at 14.
Gosh.
They went, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, and he's saying in America, when at the time his accent was even worse than it is now.
Exactly.
The biggest star in America.
And you're one day Danny DeVito will be my best friend. Dude, you are like, full of shit right now, man. DeVito's never going for you.
And that's what I was thinking. Like he knew from the start. And one thing for me, like whether I was going to do it or whether it was going to happen or not, I was going to try. And I had a vision at 13 or 14. And like for my kids or any kid, like, the worst thing you could do is finish high school and really not know what you want to do.
Yeah, just be
and
lost.
A lot of kids don't.
And not at least, like you said, have a vision. Like, be able to see.
Yeah.
Like, be able to at least see where you want to get to. And then, it's, you know, finding the path and getting the consistent drive and habits developed to go towards that. That takes time. But, at least being like, fucking, there it is. And I it's crystal clear.
And I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
And that's what I had, you know, both of these ideas. And I was in a band at 13. My high school band was called Scimitar.
Fuck
and
yeah.
Great name.
Scimitar.
By the way, when's Scimitar getting back together?
It's funny because we did a show about our high school bands on Talk is Jericho, my podcast, with the other guys in Fozzy. And I found some old Scimitar songs. Yes. I played them on the podcast. And people were saying, yeah, hey, we want a Scimitar reunion, you know.
Whoa. Wow.
You know, then you said the guitar player's still angry and the drummer doesn't play anymore. I'm like, yeah. we're not doing a reunion.
Yeah.
What was the name of one of your best Scimitar songs? Just curious.
Sour Grapes.
All right. There you go. That's not bad.
Baby Psycho was a good one.
Baby Psycho. That would be my wrestling name.
Yeah.
Baby Psycho.
Good God Almighty, that's Baby Psycho's music. He's crazy and a baby.
And it was super fast, like kind of heavy punk. Not as metal as you might think.
Yeah.
And the chorus for Baby Psycho was... Baby Psycho, ha ha ha, gonna kill you, yeah, yeah, yeah. Screams from baby's room, yeah, 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 now he's got you. Na, 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 na. And it would stop. Na, 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 na.
Still works.
Yeah, it did.
Still works.
Got me.
Bring back Baby Psycho.
And then the other one that we played was Operation Kill.
Oh, that sounds nice, yeah. Dude.
That's getting more metal.
So how many birthday parties did you
We didn't play. Well, here's what we had was... our guitar player never wanted to play gigs because he never thought we were good enough, even though he was a great player.
And that attitude.
Well, yeah. That's how you get good.
Why in the band then?
That's right.
Don't want to play gigs.
So we would play, we were rehearsing, it was called a jam at the time. We would jam in my friend's dad's garage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was summer or almost summer, like, you know, almost end of school. So you put the garage door up and you play. People walk by, whatever. But every day after school, these two girls, it's always about chicks, right?
Of course.
That's why you do anything.
Yes, that's why we're comedians.
Carly Menaka and Lorraine Foster. Shout out to them. They lived a little bit further down the block from where Warren was the drummer lived. And so they would, oh, here they come. Let's go. And the only song we knew was You Really Got Me. Just an instrumental version. We first started, so we would play it, we'd crank it up, they would walk by and try and look cool and girls. Finally, after about a couple of weeks, they were walking by and the girls went, hey, don't you know any other songs? And doesn't anybody sing? And I was like, well, we better learn some songs and someone's got to sing, so I'll do it.
Yeah.
And that's how I started singing.
Dang. Wow. Necessity is the mother of
invention. Someone had to do it, so.
Now, I've met your dad, and your dad is cool as hell.
Oh,
dad, Ted Irvine, former NHL player. Mm-hmm. And how was he when you were like, I'm going to be a rock and roll star and I'm going to be a wrestler? Was he like gung-ho or was he like, get your degree in finance and then we'll talk?
Super supportive the whole time because you got to remember, this is the reason why, for at least the way I see it, is that he knew what it was like to have a vision, a goal, and a dream.
Yeah.
You don't make it to the NHL at 20. I mean, he knew what he wanted to do at 12 years old. And obviously to get to the NHL is, you know, needle in a haystack.
Insane,
He was drafted by the Boston Bruins at 17. And was off to college with, you know, I think he'll tell you the story, put $20 in his sock because he was scared he was going to get rolled in the big city. You know, kid from Winnipeg gets off the bus in Boston and then, you know, what do I do? So he knew what it was like to have this dream and to go for it. So he was always very supportive right from the start. Like I remember when we graduated high school, he wanted to pay for studio time for Scimitar to record a song.
So he'd walk by the garage and heard... He's like, you know, I don't think these guys need lyrics or vocals. I think these bitches are crazy.
These
songs are catchy.
Baby Psycho
is going to be in my new email.
So, and
what's
then
email?
Also,
has been handed yet?
It will, young Brad. Wait, have this midget get in my house.
So then he actually, too, the year before, because I went to college for a couple of years. So the summer before I was going to go, he drove me to Calgary. Actually, it was outside of Calgary, a place called Okotoks, which was where the Hart Brothers Pro Wrestling Camp was.
Oh, wow.
And so I remember driving there with him because he wanted to check it out and see. And we pull up to this gas station. It was like Fast Gas, which is in Alberta. It's F-A-S-G-S. Fast Gas. And right behind the Hart Brothers Pro Wrestling Camp, it's going to be like the performance center now.
Right.
Like a big...
You thought it would be like this warehouse with state-of-the-art.
Everything, you know.
Yeah.
It's this fucking rundown shack.
Yeah.
Behind the Fast Gas.
No
and
way.
I'm like, that can't be it.
No. Right.
Like, talk about the realities of show business hitting you in the face right off the bat. Like, I'm sure when you first started comedy, you thought you were going to be, you know, in the next Everyone Loves Raymond. You show up at the TikTok club with five people.
I mean, you just described my first few years.
Yeah. You've been to the TikTok club?
Craig Gass is the best. He can tell you the name of the comedy club in every town. It's always like laughs, yuck, yucks, funny bones, TikToks.
Yeah.
Wait, so you thought it was going to be like the Michael Jordan of camps for that?
Right, and you go, and like literally, like I remember vividly, like it was so run down, and you go inside and one of the Hart brothers was there. Keith Hart is his name, and kind of went through the thing. And of course, I had my muscle shirt on and trying to look as big as I could.
So at least the Harts were there. It wasn't like Mary Hart from Entertainment Tonight that was there instead.
Well, when I went, that would have been better if she
was. Hart
camp. Yeah, because the year I went, Keith Hart was there, and kind of, you know, this is what we do. And conversely, when I went the next year, they had moved it from the shitty Okotoks to downtown Calgary in a place called the Silver Dollar Action Center, which was a bowling alley that had, like, you know, some casino games and stuff. And we were in the back room. It was a pink building. And if you stood on the top rope, your head would hit the roof. One of these type of roofs that I put my head through a couple times.
So I could wrestle there.
You could, yeah. It'd be very good. It'd be
great.
Perfect. Yes, exactly. So Keith Hart showed up on the first day of my wrestling camp, took everyone's money.
Yep.
And then I asked him some kind of question like, how many matches have you had? Mm-hmm. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, like if I go to I want to see how many games Wayne Gretzky's played in, I can go to a library and look at a book. I mean,
right.
Do you have anything like that? He's like, no. Take a backdrop gearbox. That was an insult. Gearbox.
Gearbox.
So he throws me off the ropes. I've never been in a fucking ring ever.
Yeah.
He throws me off the ropes.
Yeah.
I don't know how to hit ropes. I don't know what. I'm just doing what I've seen on TV.
Yeah. Right.
Because I wrestled for years with my friend in the high school gymnasium, but there's no ropes. There's just big mats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes to give me a backdrop. The only thing I knew about a backdrop is we used to practice it, me and my friend, where you would take a backdrop and land on your feet.
Oh, okay.
Because Owen Hart used to do that. So I'll like Owen Hart. So he throws me off the ropes, barely get back to him. He goes to big, and this, a backdrop is a big move.
And it's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
It's basically like, Adam, you're running at me. I grab your legs. I push your legs over. You do a flip over my
a front flip and land on your back.
Yeah, your fucking dreams, man. But yeah, keep but going.
The,
yeah.
And this is like, the only thing I knew about a backdrop was I'd seen them on TV.
Yeah.
And I knew how to stand up on my feet. So I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. He throws me for a backdrop. I land on my feet.
I think that's insane, right?
I think I'm the star pupil.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the biggest hit.
And I imagine Keith did not find that very funny.
As I'm thinking this, I feel this fucking force drag me to the mat and put me in a shoot hold where his one hand is under my jaw, his other hand is on top of my skull, and he's pressing it together where I can feel my teeth bending.
Oh, my God.
Like, you can't even do it. And I was just thinking, like, oh my God, he's going to kill me. Like, I'm going to lose my teeth on the first day of wrestling school.
Yeah.
The only reason why he let go is because I couldn't scream. I was too scared and freaked out. If I would have screamed, I found out later he would just do it harder. But because I didn't do anything, he just let go. And he's like, don't be a smart ass or whatever. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm fucking
doing.
What
a nut job.
Yeah. And then he left, and we never saw him again for the rest of the summer. So it was the Hart Brothers camp in brackets for one day.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
My God.
Well, that was your welcome to wrestling, kid.
That's it, kid.
That was your moment.
Right, take my money, call me a gearbox, and try and snap my teeth in two.
So as terrifying as that was, having that experience and landing on your feet, like, it had to give you like an immediate burst of confidence of like, okay, well, this is clearly something I should be participating in.
I mean, the thing is that I knew what I wanted to do, and I actually had trained, and I knew how to do body slams and stuff, because like I said, I used to wrestle with my friend. We had this, it was called the BTWF, the Big Time Wrestling Federation, and we were like a couple schizos. I had 10 characters, he had 10 characters, and we would just wrestle each other over and over again as these different characters.
That's awesome.
So I knew a little bit about wrestling, but the other side of it was I looked the part. I had long blonde
hair. That's a big part of it,
And it's show business. You know, Gene Simmons told me, always look like a star. Mm-hmm. And when I showed up at wrestling camp, I thought, I'm going to be the smallest guy in the room. Because it's 1990. Mm-hmm. All the big stars are big.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So that's 1990. So that's
Hogan, Warrior, Macho Man, Savage. Just, like, every guy is either 6 foot,
King Kong,
foot,
Bundy,
eight.
Just these massive humans.
Dude, I had the Hogan doll. Yeah. I had the Hogan chapstick. I had the Hogan lube. I had the Hogan toaster biscuits. Like,
Hogan
so
condoms.
Many, Hogan condoms.
Hogan butt plug.
Which were broken when you bought them. Like,
they were pre-ripped like a shirt. It's horrible. Horrible condom.
Wait, so that time was just so...
Well, the point is... So
Hogan condoms catchphrase. You're going to have a little brother. Brother. Sorry, I had to get that joke in. I had to.
Well played, sir. Yeah. But when I thought, okay, I'm about 195 pounds. I've been training my ass off. Mm-hmm. I show up at camp, and me and this other guy, Lance Storm, who's been aforementioned.
Yep.
The only two guys in the camp that have ever seen the inside of a gym. And I'm not kidding. And there's 15 people there.
Wow.
And I was thinking, like, I can't believe it. Like, I thought I was going to be the small guy. I'm the big guy in the room.
Wow.
Because I cared. But thankfully, Lance was there. Because if he wasn't there, or if I wasn't there, I don't know if... He said if he didn't see me, because Lance was there first and saw everybody, mm-hmm. and said if I didn't show up, he would have gotten his car and drove back to North Bay, Ontario.
Yeah.
Because he said, this is not what I expected it to be. These guys are just a bunch of fucking clods
yeah.
that want to try wrestler for the summer.
Yeah.
I didn't see the other guys, but once I met Lance, I remember he was super nice. For some reason, he's the first guy I ever saw, and I had a big trunk in the back like of my car, like a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, like yeah. John Candy's oh, trunk, yeah. and Steve Martin helped me. Oh, that yeah. was like he helped me move that trunk into the hotel. So if we didn't have each other, because we pushed each other,
yeah.
if he was good at something that I wasn't good at, it pissed me off. If I was good at something, it pissed. So that helped us get through and to be actually fairly good because we had somebody to work with.
Today's episode of the About Last Night podcast is brought to you by Koi CBD. Ooh, CBD oil, baby. Feeling relaxed just hearing me talk about it, aren't you? If you don't know what CBD oil is, don't feel like a dum-dum. Adam's here to tell you. CBD is an oil derived from industrial hemp and has no psychoactive effects, man. So you can get the medical benefits, okay, from the hemp plant without getting high. There's no weed. You're not going to get paranoid. It's a great natural alternative to over-the-counter and pharmaceutical drugs. People use CBD oil for pain, depression, anxiety, stress, inflammation. New benefits are being discovered for CBD oil all the time. My mom uses the topical cream from Koi CBD, and it's helped immensely, which is big time because she's been having a tough time with arthritis and finding a solution. And Koi CBD is stepping up to the plate with their topical creams. They've got tincture droplets, vape pens, edibles, pet products for your dogs and cats to chill out. Come on, it's a stressful life being a cat and a dog. You want to chill out? Get some Koi CBD treats. They got topical products and more. All their products are manufactured in the USA with 100% natural CBD oil. It's a family-owned and operated company, and it truly is the best-tasting CBD products on the market. I feel like left and right, people are approaching me after shows, just being in the comedy business, because comedy and CBD kind of go hand in hand. It's a great stress reliever for our world. The Koi CBD gummies I fuck with daily because it puts me in a zen state before I start my day. And at night, kind of relaxes me and helps me sleep better, quite honestly. It's America's number one trusted CBD brand. All the Koi CBD products are THC-free. And there's a guaranteed purity, safety, and consistency level in all of their products. They're the best tasting CBD products on the market. Again, I've tried so many. The amount of people that have been like, try these pens. We got these flavors and these, you can put strawberry. Root beer foot. It's like, shut up, man. No, I'm going with Koi CBD because they got the most shit and the best tasting shit. And quite honestly, it's made me feel the best out of any of the products I've tried. And that's why they're America's number one trusted CBD brand. So if you want to get your stress relief on, your relaxation going, and start living a better, healthier life, get rid of that depression, anxiety, stress, and just start feeling better, then get hooked up with Koi CBD, okay? Head on over right now to KoiCBD.com, that's KoiCBD.com, and enter promo code AboutLastNight for 20% off any retail order from the website. That's Koi, KoiCBD.com, promo code AboutLastNight for 20% off any retail order from the website. Gummies, tinctures, pens, creams, they got it all. I'm telling you, they're the shit. And Brad and I couldn't love them more. Who knows? They might fucking make Brad grow, which would ruin his act, but would help him reach the Cocoa Puffs on the top shelf.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that because I think that's a lot how it is when you start at open mic nights is you walk in like, oh man, we're going to be comedians, and you walk in expecting Eddie Murphy to be in line with you.
Right.
And then you look around, you go, oh, I'm the funniest fucker in this line. Yes. Like, I thought, like, I remember I went to watch an open mic night before I did it to just be like, all right, can I do this? Yeah. Am I in these guys' leagues? And then there was literally homeless guys that have walked off the street that are just up there rambling. I'm like, oh, I'm the funniest guy now. Yeah. Like literally right now.
And some of those homeless guys are still getting stage time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's one at the Comedy Store who was there at my very first open mic night, and he's still doing it. Boone
Shaka. Yeah.
Yeah.
Homeless Mike is that laughing gas down in Kipsy next week.
Yeah.
I actually did an open mic around this time too.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I remember I was like, I think I can do this. And I think it mm-hmm. obviously really was a Yuck Yucks in Calgary.
Yeah. There's a Yuck Yucks
you've probably
there.
Been there.
Yeah.
I remember really focusing on my look. What's my look going to be as a comedian? comedian. Like, sure. I remember I had a blue kind of a nice sleeveless shirt with a like a tank top underneath, and we're like, this looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because '90s, that's like Dice. So that guy's that guy's all look, yeah, all attitude.
This is 90-91. So yeah. I remember my big routine. Part of my routine was based around when you go to the movies and they ask you for golden topping, is what it's called in Canada, like butter in your popcorn.
Oh, okay.
Somehow relating golden topping to golden showers. And nice. I thought, this is going to be fucking...
I'm in.
This there is better than, you know, Goonie Goo Goo here. Yeah. Right? Didn't work out that way. I remember not getting any laughs.
Just do Goonie Goo Goo.
Yeah.
Do Eddie's material.
Yeah. And then I just went, it won a lick psych. Thank you, good night.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I actually tried to open mic, had things going differently. Wow. I might be sitting on that side of the desk.
Then you would be what Joe Rogan is now, just a swole, intelligent comedian.
Exactly.
Because, yeah. Wow. So now, did you do your open mic with the thoughts of being a comedian, or did you do it like, this is going to help my in-ring persona and my mic skills?
It wasn't anything that thought out. I just thought it'd be something fun to do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was really intrigued by this golden shower, golden topic comparison. Like, damn it.
Need a place to work it out.
Yeah, I have a genius thought.
Exactly. I mean, this is great. And I remember I went out with my other friend, Paul Lazenby, great guy. So he was on the cruise last year as well. Mm-hmm. And he was like a trained Muay Thai fighter. He used to hit his shins with a steel rod to calcium. Jeez. And I remember he walked up there with a bat. And he was a really big power lifter. And he just looked at a guy and went, "You better fucking laugh." That was his opening line, right?
And that's that's a good line.
It's a good line. Yeah.
I'd be scared out of my mind, and I would start laughing immediately. I'm just like, this is the funniest guy in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, so did you have advice or people around you, mentors, to kind of give you encouraging words about what sort of a look to have in the ring when you're starting to look for
really.
That?
I mean, I kind of always wanted to be, like, once again, the rock and roll connection.
Yeah.
Was very – and the reason why I started wrestling first is that just – what opened up first, because I still was playing in bands and writing songs and recording demos, and
you were able to dip your feet in both worlds.
I was like, once again, it wasn't just something I woke up one day at I'm gonna be a rock star. It's like I always wanted to be in it, and it wasn't even be a rock star. I wanted to play rock and roll.
Yeah,
I wanted to be in a band.
Yeah,
I wanted to play shows and you know, that sort of the vibe. And I always wanted to be like, I was really attracted to Paul Stanley, David Lee Roth, Freddie Mercury, Bruce Dickinson, like the great rock
showman,
the Jagger, the great rock and roll frontman. So I thought, if I can be a rock and roll frontman in a wrestling ring, David Lee Roth, like, that would be a cool vibe. Because once again, I'm not the biggest guy, but if I can be like the fucking frontman,
the coolest,
the person having the charisma, So I always focused on that. So my look was always,
and Lance Storm went the exact other route.
Once again, we started as a team, and there, you know, what he did good, I wasn't as good at, which was actually in ring, and what I did good, he wasn't good at, which was the personality and the crowd involvement.
Great
and
all
team stuff.
Yeah. I'm really good at being a dwarf. Adam's not that good at it.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's why we're a great team. Know,
exactly.
So
Adam's actually really shitty at being a dwarf. Failing miserably.
If you can't tell, he's putting my chin into my chest again. Strangling me.
Call back.
Sleep.
So yeah, so that's kind of was the vibe. So I was, because when you first start out, I mean, no one's really mentoring you because you don't really know anybody. And we're talking, you know, once a week, if you're lucky, you know, at the bowling alley, because that's where the shows were. Mm-hmm. But as I went on and became more professional, every territory that you went to, every company that you worked in, when you started showing some aptitude, once again, showing that you cared and you were good, you were an asset to the company,
right?
Not just some kid from another country trying to do this, because guys come and go so much, and there's so many guys that would,
I'm sure, once again, so many people that just look, watch on TV and go, I could do that, and they... And I
would even get to the point of working shows, of being in different companies. So when people started realizing that you were good and would help, then you had a lot of help, a mentorship, you know?
Yeah. Man, I remember the first time I was able to run ropes in a ring, I was like, this is going to be like bouncing off a rubber band. Ow!
Uh-huh.
Those ropes are elevator cables.
It's legitimately,
they hurt.
I remember, it's like, you might as well stand here and hit me in the breadbasket with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
Because that's what it feels like.
And
the bruises
that I got. You ever get used to that? No.
Well, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's a callus. You get a body callus. But I had crazy bruises. Like, like ropey, black, thick bruises all up and down the side of my torso.
And no bruise was, like, ever so big and grotesque that you were like, all right, maybe.
No, because once again, like, I to me, there was never like a contingency plan. Yeah. Like, okay, if I don't make it, this is what I'm doing. There was none of that. It's like, this is what I'm doing. I'm not,
like, you have to be like that, don't you?
You have to.
Yeah,
you have blind to believe ignorance. In yourself.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories about that was Travis Barker, the drummer of Blink-182. He covered himself in tattoos from a very early age to be like, well, the only job I can have now is a rock star.
No excuse.
Because I'm covered in tattoos. Yeah. I'm not going to be a banker.
Right.
So that's literally why he did it. And
that's, once again, because there's no escape. You have to do this. And so, like to me, it's like, I don't know how – I was actually pretty lucky because I got hooked up in Mexico very early.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was 21. So I've been wrestling as much as I want to since 1992. Full time. If I want to step back, if I want to work two matches a year, if I want to work 20, I never didn't have a job in the business I wanted one since
great.
I was, 21. So I was fortunate.
Yeah. And then how fast did the name Chris Jericho come about?
Right from the start.
Really?
Right from the start. I remember originally I wanted to be called Jack Action. That was going to be my name.
Wow. Is it too late to change it? That's fucking...
Jack
By the
Action.
Way, Jack Action sounds like the toy that Schwarzenegger was going to get for his son if Turbo Man truly was sold out. You know? It's like, this is Jack Action. There's no more Turbo Man. But
to me, it sounds like something that you find in a fucking porno shop.
Yeah. Jack Action.
Let me finish.
Please. It's a toy. Arnold gets it. Jack Action. And his kid's like, what's the bottom part for? To put your cock in.
Yeah.
And then you guys know Andy Kindler?
Yes. Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Worked together many times.
Yeah,
he always says, in Hollywood, everyone says, but let me finish.
Yeah.
Like, I hate Star Wars. I like it. But let me finish. But I really like this last one.
Right.
You know,
Jack Action.
Yeah, so Jack Action was going to be it. And I was practicing my autograph because, once again, big Paul Stanley influence. And I remember my cousin Ray had an autograph from Paul Stanley. Where it was to Ray, Paul Stanley, and the Y went into a star. Because he's the star child.
He's the star child.
So I was like, I'm going to do that. Even though an O for Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, so at the time it was Jack Action. So an N, you could actually do the N into a star.
Mm-hmm.
So I was practicing the autograph on a school binder or something. And I maybe had some kind of notes from class, from wrestling school. And Lance, once again, was like, what is that? I'm like, Jack Action. Is that going to be your wrestling name? I'm like, why? He goes, because it's really stupid. I'm like, no. Jack Action. As if. And I'm like,
it's going to be your wrestling name.
Yeah,
exactly. So I had to think of a name because we had a match coming up and they said, like, you need a name by, Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it was Monday and I was in my car and there's a German power metal band that I love called Helloween to this day. And they have a record called Walls of Jericho. And I had the cassette sitting on my seat and I was like, Chris Jericho. That's cool. I want to be Chris Jericho. And they're both like, Lance and then the guy who was kind of booking were like, oh, that's good. And I was like, oh. If they would have said it's bad, I might be Chris Schwarzenheimer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
how
damn.
About Chris Action? Wow.
Chris Jericho.
And then obviously for those who know you, you get your name from the Walls of Jericho song. And then that's also the title of your first finisher. Or your...
Yeah, well, when I went to WWE, the...
Because it was called the Lion Tamer
was the Lion Tamer in WCW.
Yeah.
And then when I went to WWE, Vince said, we've got too many lions around here. You have to change it. There was one Lion's Den match that Ken Shamrock had.
Right.
They must have just had it that week where Vince said, we never saw the fucking Lion's Den again.
Yeah.
But I couldn't use Lion Tamer because that week... So I was trying to think of a bunch of names, and the WWE has a creative department. That comes up with a bunch of names and gives you suggestions.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, Triple H had a suggestion. Call it the Standing Torture Device, the STD. And I was like, well, if I was Val Venus, maybe.
Yeah.
But, that's not going to work. So then there was all of these lists. And I wish I still had it because...
Oh, I can only imagine what that list
would
look
like. These
are
people that are getting paid to come up with such gems as the Rock and Roll Finisher.
Oh.
Yeah. The Salad Shooter.
Yes, of course.
I'm not kidding. These are real.
The Salad Shooter.
The Salad Shooter was on the list. I'm like, what is this even
A Boston
mean?
Crab is a Salad Shooter?
I have no idea where they came. I just had Rhino in here. He said when they first went to WWE, they wanted to change the name from Rhino to Mary.
What? Mary? Is his middle name fuck and then last name kill? That's the only way that's acceptable.
Let me finish. There's two R's.
Right. Yeah. So then none of these worked. And I finally just said to Vince, what about the Walls of Jericho? And he's like, oh, that's good. Let's use that.
Yeah.
So that's where it came from. Because it was either the STD, the Salad Shooter, or the Walls of Jericho.
Yeah. I would tell people, whether it be wrestling, comedy, metal, rock and roll, whatever, go with your first instinct. You know what you want. You know what you like.
That's one thing, though, with WWE is they have to get involved with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Put their stamp on everything. So,
sure.
obviously the Lion Tamer is still the best name for that finish.
Yeah.
People still call it that from those days.
Steve Austin called it that in a promo during a live Raw where he called it the Lion Tamer. And then, of course, the audience, whoa, that's not the name.
Oh, Oscar, whoa. So, I mean, but whatever reason for that, and that's the thing with Vince and WWE, one week, like Pat Patterson says, one week he likes vanilla, the next week he likes chocolate, but it's his ice cream store, so what are you going to do? And he's right. You know what he did? So he didn't like lions that week. It's like there was one phase that we went through where he didn't want any of the good guys to be announced from Canada because no one's going to cheer for you if you're from Canada. So all of us that had been announced from Canada for years were now like residing in, you know, Manhattan, New York, Chris Jericho.
Oh, wow.
Residing in Atlanta, Georgia, Chris Benoit. Like, you can't be. I was like, what difference does it make where you're from? Like, if you're over, you're over.
Yeah, you're, and it's done. They like
that
you.
Went
they
away
like
for
you.
A while. And, sure. And, you know, so there's different rules that come and go that you just have to ride it out and just deal with it.
Well, first of all, I think every wrestler should be from where Cactus Jack is from, and that's Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
Still the best place, right?
That's it. Is that a real town?
Yeah.
Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. That's
where, how do you get there?
Well, there's two options: Truth or Consequences.
You take a left at Guilt and turn on Lie Street.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's, I think it's like a little one of those little towns that basically just a bunch of gas stations off the highway. But yeah, I always love that Truth or Consequences, Sweetwater, Texas, Stone Mountain, Georgia. You remember that?
Yeah,
show, you
know? That's some good ones.
Are there certain cities, like people ask us for comedians with comedy clubs, that are just more privy to wrestling and they just get more fired up, that you get jacked up to go to, or that
Chicago's always a good one.
Yeah,
like, you know, Chicago's gonna be a crazy crowd, and that goes for Fozzie too, for Rock and Roll.
Oh yeah,
and for whatever reason,
Chicago, the site of the next AEW pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's no coincidence. We're going back because it's a great town, always super excited.
We try to parlay Fozzie shows around.
I used to do that, but there's no way.
Too much.
One thing is, it's just, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the reason why. Like, you can't be both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, I remember, like, you know, if you go to a town and think, okay, well, we did 10,000 people in, I don't know, Philly. If we do a show after the show, you know, 1% show up, it's going to be a 100 people, and it doesn't work that way. So another thing that I had to do as well is really distance wrestling from Fozzie, because at first people thought, oh, it's just wrestler guy playing rock star.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't do that. So I was very cognizant to keep them separate and let people know, like, listen, when Gerard Leto is on stage with 30 Seconds from Mars, he's not wearing the Dallas Buyers Club dress and, you know, acting like he's dying of AIDS.
Not because he doesn't want to, just because he always forgets it for the gig.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, seriously, and that's the way that I built this band.
That's smart.
So it took us twice as long to get people, or we had to work twice as hard to get people's respect just because I'm in the band. But once we got their respect, we've got it for life, and people don't, these guys really fucking...
Yeah. How many shows or... just years did it take to feel like you got that?
I'd say, well, we've been doing this. Our first Fozzie record came out in 2000, but that was more of a part-time thing.
Yeah.
A lot of covers in the set.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of half-assed it. 2010 is when we decided, let's really make a go of this. And I think our record Sin and Bones was the first kind of little nudge.
Mm-hmm.
Then the record Do You Want to Start a War?
We That's had our the
first one. Charting single, Lights Go Out.
Yep.
But then when Judas came out, suddenly we had a whole record company behind us, because Sony bought our record company right when Judas started becoming a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically let go of all the other bands on that label. But because they had this one band, well, this is Judas. It climbed up 10 spots this week. Oh, it's another 5. Judas was on the charts for like 27 weeks, started at 60 and ended up at number 5, which is crazy to get on the top 10. So we had 3 top 10s on that record. And that really cemented us as kind of the Sony golden boys for right now.
Wow. Right.
And now it's really a whole different.
And in terms of, I mean, I know you like to keep the personas separate, but in terms of the timing with the Judas record and then you kind of going outside of WWE and started doing some New Japan AEW stuff, where now your entrance music is your own band's hit song, which is pretty awesome when you think about
it. It's pretty cool, because so I was thinking about not retiring. That's such an overused word, and it's not what I was thinking, but I was thinking maybe it's time to wind down wrestling. Mm-hmm. 2015, I only worked live events. It was my idea, like, I don't want to be on TV, because let's say I can only work couple shows here, a couple shows there.
Yeah.
TV's hard to get in and out of. So Vince is like, you can work as many shows as you want. So I work like 60 live events.
Yeah.
Just the house shows.
House shows. So that's that's
untelevised.
Live,
non-televised.
Yeah, non-TV.
Right.
And then I was like, well, maybe it's time to wind down. But then I had an idea. I'll go back for another 3 months or 4 months or something. Ended up staying for a year and a half because I got in this program with Kevin Owens, who was this guy that we were best friends and we had great chemistry. And then we turned on each other and it was this big brouhaha. It was probably the best story on the show for about 8 months. And then the big blow off culmination match was for WrestleMania. Originally, it was going to be for the world title in the main event.
Mm-hmm.
Then it got changed and got moved down to the second match on the show. First match, second match. And I was like, if that's as far as I can get with the best program of the year, it's time to step back.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right at the same time, Judas came out. Fozzy did another 18 months. It was huge. But then the idea for Japan came up to do this dream match with Jericho and Kenny Omega, who was a big star in Japan, who's also from Winnipeg, where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like almost like a Mayweather-McGregor where they didn't think it would ever happen because he worked for New Japan, I worked for WWE.
Right.
Went and worked that match, and then it kind of opened up this whole new world of creativity, which led to doing more in Japan, which eventually led me to AEW. And now here I am thinking that I was going to stop in 15, and we're getting into 20, and I'm probably... How do you say this without being egotistical?
Here, I'll say it.
Yeah.
You're having the best matches of your career right now.
And probably with the most name value that I've ever had as well.
So it's all the stars are aligning.
I guess. And who would I never, that's why I don't plan shit. You just got to go with it, man. You got to go with it. You know, I just found out that we sold 10,000 tickets for the first AEW TV show in 3 hours today. We sold out.
Which is coming to TNT October 2nd.
And no one thought it was going to sell out. Oh, it's a Wednesday night. It's Washington, D.C. It's not a sexy city like Vegas or Chicago. And I said, guys, it's going to sell out. I'm telling you. Boom. Went clean in the first 3 hours.
Damn. Yeah.
There's a buzz about AEW because it's the first time in 20 years there's legitimate... once again, not competition, but an alternative for people.
Yeah.
Another option.
Because it used to be just WWE once Vince bought WCW.
Right.
He bought his competition. There was really nothing going up against him. Now, and I said this when I was a guest on your podcast, Talk is Jericho, AEW seems like whenever you're watching WWE and you're like, this is kid shit, watch AEW. Yeah. AEW is for the marks. AEW is for the diehard wrestling fans.
Well, but what we want to do, though, is draw people in with that. But then when we go national, we're going to have to appeal to wrestling fans that don't know who a lot of these guys are.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I was so instrumental to bring a guy like me in, because I'm the one guy on the roster that everybody knows if you're a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And that goes for wrestling fans from the 90s to the 2000s to now.
Yeah, and you need that. You need some brand recognition to go, oh, I know what that is.
Right, but if you also talk about the fact that, you know, in 1998, kind of the middle of the Monday Night Wars, there was 12 million people watching wrestling on a Monday night. Now, if they get 3 million, they're happy.
They're thrilled.
Where do those other 9 million go? They might be gone forever, or maybe they just don't like WWE.
Yeah.
We'll find out pretty soon when we start our weekly TV and what kind of ratings we draw. But it's exciting because you have a whole roster of guys that people on a nationwide level don't know who've been doing this for 10 years and are super popular worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, but there's going to be people that never heard of the Young Bucks or Kenny Omega or all these guys, and they're going to go, who in the hell are these guys? They're amazing.
That's great.
Yeah.
Why have I never heard of them before?
That's exciting, right?
That's exciting.
Yeah. That was me when I consider myself a pretty good wrestling fan. I watched the first AEW pay-per-view and I was like, holy shit. Right.
Who are these?
Who's this Luchasaurus? That guy's awesome.
Right. You know, and once again, so we have a great roster of Luchasaurus, Jungle Boy, MJF, Hangman Page, you know, all these guys that that I'm sure WWE were salivating to get, but they were also wanting to do their own thing, which is what we talked about, to have that creative freedom to be you. If I wrote all your jokes for you, Brad, and said, here's what your boss at Yuck Yucks wants you to say.
Yeah.
Okay. Five of these jokes aren't funny. I'll do the best I can.
Right.
I could do better, but this is what he wants you to do. Don't change a thing. And that's what you get sometimes. And it's like, dude, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And when you're sort of micromanaging an entire roster, you probably can't make the decisions that are best for those individual talent members.
Because you have an entire roster. I don't care about the rest of the roster. I care about me. I've got one guy to worry about.
Yeah.
So let me be me.
Yeah.
You know, we had a show in Jacksonville about a month ago, mm-hmm. and I did a run in and a pull apart, but I did a promo, an interview. Mm-hmm. It was the first time in 20 years I did a promo, a live promo on TV that wasn't written by somebody or mm-hmm. co-written by me, or but more importantly, approved.
Yeah.
Every promo has to be approved. I went out there like improv comedy. Yeah. I didn't have any bits planned. I had a couple things I wanted to say. I'm just, how good are you, Jericho? Everyone tells you, everyone's up my ass. You're such a great promo. Really? Let's see. Go out there with nothing and see how it goes. And it was great because guess what? I'm a professional.
Yes.
This is what I've been doing for almost 30 years. Let me be a professional. Let me be Chris Jericho and it's all going to work out.
I hope you'd be good at it by now because if not, it's not going to happen.
Like, you know, if I sent you on stage tonight, Brad, and said, listen, dude, you got to go out there and give me 15 minutes, but it has to be stuff you've never done before.
Yeah.
You just got to go talk about your day. Like, you're a funny guy, and, and you'll see somebody like, you're funny.
Yeah.
I have no doubt you're funny. Go be funny. That's all you got to do.
It'll happen.
You know?
Yeah. How imperative is it to kind of do what you're doing and be, you know, spread your wings in different areas? You know, your podcast is fucking incredible and crushing the music world and doing what you do in wrestling. Like, do you think now, like, you know, in comedy, like everyone says, you can't just do stand up. You got to be writing scripts. You got to have a podcast. You got to be, you know, flexing your acting chops, whatever it is, and be multifaceted.
Yeah.
When did you feel like that was something you needed to do, or did you just do it because
honestly,
you were
right from the start? Because like I said, I always had these two ideas.
Right.
And once I made it in wrestling and then made it in music, then you're kind of unstoppable. Cause now like, what, mm-hmm. people what else can you. I try?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Podcasting, very easy. Cause it's just conversations. And I love talking about people and learning about people and writing books. I'm a journalist by trade and acting. I mean, I've been acting for 30 years, you know.
I love it when people are surprised that wrestlers can act. It's the same when they're surprised that comedians can act. It's like, oh, that's when you're wrestling, you're acting.
You're committing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're being a character. You're inventing characters. You're finding little things. When you're a comedian, you're doing your hour set, you're playing four or five different characters on stage just during that hour.
I did Groundlings for a year out here. And, when I started doing it, the director was Mindy Sterling.
Yep.
She was like,
Frau Farbissina from Austin Powers.
She's like, you're a natural at this. And, you know, I said, well, this is basically what we do. I used to go, one of the things in the early 2000s was when the match was done, mm-hmm. you would go do 20 minutes of improv with either Austin or Rock. Now they're both great at improv, but they need a heel to work with, which was always me.
Yeah.
We used to go 20 minutes. I went 20 minutes with The Rock in Singapore with a balloon who was my only friend. Everybody here hates me, but this balloon is my only friend. And The Rock's like, can I say hi to your balloon? What's your balloon? This is Jake the Balloon. Hello, Jake the Balloon. How are you?
Good
to meet you, Jake the Balloon. Jake the Balloon, you know what? You know, if you smell what The Rock is cooking, breaks the balloon, gives me the rock bottom. People cheering, going nuts. And that, like, of course you're going to be good at Groundlings, whatever you want to do. So, but that really helped me, conversely, in wrestling and in acting and in music. You're committing. So all of these things come from a show business standpoint.
Yeah.
And I always say that wrestling is a lot like, I call it show business boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
If you're good in wrestling and you make it to the top, you'll be good at every little bit.
Yeah.
Live promos, backstage promos, taped, comedy, drama, sadness, jokes, whatever.
Yeah. So
stage presence, camera presence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you see The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, doing what he's doing now, you are probably like, yeah, that's who he was.
It's no surprise from a character standpoint, but from a drive standpoint. I mean, the guy's always been driven. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like Steve on reality TV. People love the character of Steve Austin. That's why he's had a show for the last 10 years in one way or another, whether it's his country, whatever, you know, the stuff he's done. Broken
Outdoor
Skull
stuff.
Ranch and the country music shows and country music CMT show. But so it's like Mick Foley being a great writer. It's like, you know, Jesse Ventura or Glenn Jacobs being the mayor of Knoxville.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me because Glenn Jacobs knows how to captivate. It's the same reason.
Yeah. For those of you guys who don't know, that's Kane.
Kane,
the huge 7-foot guy that you never said two words in WWE is now the mayor of a town in Tennessee.
But during the period of the career when he did say two words, you know, I'm just going to say this. I don't want to get political in any shape or form, but it's the reason why Trump got elected. He knows how to be on camera. He knows how to draw people in, and that's why he got in.
Yeah,
you know, and that's if you have that presence and know how to connect with an audience. That's the secret of show business. Not just wrestling, not just rock and roll, not just comedy, not just podcasting, but anything in show business. When you have a crowd that's excited to hear what you're going to say, you'll always have a fan base and you'll always have a job.
Yeah. And I mean, and that goes to show with all the times that you've reinvented yourself and had new gimmicks. I mean, cause you know, like since Hulk Hogan was Hulk Hogan, he pretty much did the same thing until he was in NWO, but it was just Hulk Hogan. You have had all these different gimmicks. Yes. Mm-hmm. You've always been Chris Jericho, but there was Lionheart, Y2J, Savior Chris Jericho. You had the list. Now you have your AEW character. Was that always in your mind? Like, I have to constantly be doing these new things?
It all started when I got to... Well, first of all, it all started when I first got in the business where I always wanted to have the best ring gear. You know what I mean? And I always went out of my way. Even when I had no money, I would always try and get a new pair of tights, you know, once a month or once every couple months. And I had a lady that would... One of my friend's moms would make them. And then as you get, you know, you get costume designers and sure. that sort of thing. But so... And then when I got to WWE, I realized... A, I'm on TV every week. If yeah. I don't change something, people are going to get bored of me very quickly.
Yeah.
So I would always fuck with my facial hair, you know, a beard this week or a Fu Manchu this week or just sideburns, then also mess with my hairstyle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then when they started putting out action figures, and they would put action figures out 3-4 times a year. If you had a new costume, they would put an action figure out of it. So that's just more money in my pocket. So I would get new tights once again every month. Change my hair, change my
hair. So your tight lady budget went up.
Yeah, but once again, you gotta spend money to make money.
You have to. Yeah. Invest in yourself, right?
Yes. It's like I said, like super influenced by Kiss and Paul and Gene. And like, you know, you think savvy those costumes were cheap in 1975 when they had no money, but no. So you put your money back into the show. And so I would always have glitter and different colors.
So how many figures were coming out?
I think I lost count because they don't send them to me. I think there's almost 200 Jericho dolls since 1998.
And wow. There's got to be some super fan out there with a room full of you.
I hope there is somebody out there that has full of me.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. Because I'd love to
That's
see
That's what I'm
them,
saying. You know? Yeah.
Just see them all. Wow. That was the time I changed that. That was the time I did that.
That's brilliant.
So it came with that. And then when I came back in 2007, mm-hmm. I was gone for 2 years. Just, I got fed up with wrestling. I got burned out. So I left for a couple years. I came back. And I came back as kind of a watered-down version of Y2J.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized after about two, this isn't working. Like, I'm done. Like,
yeah.
This character was a product of 2000 to 2003 or 4.
Yeah.
And I can't bring it back. And at the time, I had just seen the movie No Country for Old Men,
mm-hmm.
which had Javier Bardem playing Anton Chigurh.
Yeah, Javier Bardem. Very,
yeah.
Friendo.
He was a very soft-spoken lunatic. Like, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
This is how it's going to be, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
I started implementing that. A lot of Nick Bockwinkel, who's a wrestler from AWA, we talked about earlier,
mm-hmm.
suits and ties, using big words, talking over people's heads, but very quietly and slowly. It was a whole new persona. It was complete bad guy, and that's when I was like, I'm getting rid of everything. I'm taking off my makeup like Kiss did in 83.
Yeah.
How much do you – I switched from long tights to short tights. I got rid of the countdown. Mm-hmm. I told the announcers, never, ever call me Y2J, ever.
Yeah.
That never say that name again.
Yeah.
All of those little things influence people to realize he's different now.
Yeah.
It's not just the same guy with the same costume doing the same shit, but now he's a bad guy. Like, he's a son of a bitch. And all the stuff I loved about Chris Jericho was gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's where I kind of started realizing, like, if I revamp myself, when things start getting stale, I'll never be a nostalgia guy.
Yeah. Right, where everyone's just like, hey, do the move that you did 30 years ago, when I was a kid.
Say suck it or whatever. Like, I'm never going to do that.
Right.
And then around the same time, started really understanding the genius of David Bowie and Madonna as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also Undertaker always changed at that time. But really it was Bowie where I was like, this guy, every album is different from the last. Every look is different. The sound is different. I want to be like David Bowie. And that's where it really kicked in, to where now I specifically change things just to change them, like the list. And there's another reason why I didn't go back to WWE, because I know if I went back, I'd have to be the list.
Yeah.
The list is done. The list was a period of time. It was great. I can't go back and go, you're on the, you just made the list.
Yeah.
I would feel really stupid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's done.
Yeah. It's done.
You know, so it's time to move on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. Constantly evolve, change, create. And I think people live vicariously through that.
Yeah. So. And because
your fans change. They get older. Yeah. They're in new stages of life.
Yeah.
They're going through new things. So you should change with them because they're not going to always want the same old thing.
Like when I go to a Metallica show, a Kiss show, or any show that I go to, I want AC/DC. I like it when they play new songs because I understand as an artist, it's like, geez, I wish they would, like the Kiss, I wish they would just do all 70s. Kiss has been around for 40 years. If they just did all 70s, you're basically saying the last 30 years sucked. Like, I get it. Play the lion's share, but throw a couple 80s tunes in. Throw a couple new tunes in. That's what keeps you excited as an artist and excited as a fan.
I mean, hell, you just saw the Rolling Stones a few weeks ago.
I did.
Another example.
How were they?
Amazing.
Wow.
And I've seen them 5 times, and this might be the best time that I've seen them.
Dang.
Because they're just getting better, and it's not better for old guys, better for anybody.
Yeah.
Once again, and people say to me, like, how do you still do a lion salt, like a backflip in the ring?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, for me, I've been doing it since I was 22 years old. It's just muscle memory.
Yeah.
I could probably do it when I was 70 because it's nothing to me. It's like standing up out of this chair.
Mm-hmm.
How does Mick do it at 76? Because he's been doing it since he was 19. This is what the Stones do.
Yeah.
It's all they've ever done.
They play music.
If he didn't do it, he would feel fucking dead.
Yeah.
So I think, as we get older, and the line of what's old is kind of disappearing.
Yeah,
I remember when my dad was my age; he was wearing, you know, velour sweatsuits and big giant glasses. And he's done. Now it's like, fuck. I mean, what's the cool? What kind of Varvatos stuff can I get?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know, whatever. Like, let's just keep. If you try to stay young, you can stay young.
And you're doing it with your moveset too. You have a brand new finisher and you're 48 years old and you're doing a brand new finisher, the Judas Effect,
Judas
right?
Effect, yeah.
Yeah, which is a spinning back elbow.
Spinning back elbow, because that started because I started doing MMA training
for
the last 6 months, which just opened up my whole mind once again for training.
Sure.
Doing the same shit all the time. You're phoning it in. I was phoning in all my workouts.
You could tell, huh?
Can tell, because when I started doing MMA, it kept me on my toes. It opened up my mind mentally. It reminded me when I started doing yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is real, and I feel it. I'm fucking excited.
Yeah.
And a spinning back elbow was just something we did. You know, punch, kick, left, right, upper hub. Do a spinning elbow. Wow. That's really easy to do. And a good finishing move in wrestling is something that you can give to anybody that doesn't hurt.
Mm.
For example, the Stone Cold Stunner.
Yeah.
You can give that move to Rey Mysterio. You can give it to Big Show.
Mm-hmm.
A torture rack where you're picking someone up on your shoulders, not a good idea.
Right.
Because you're not going to give that to the Big Show.
No.
A spinning back elbow is super easy. It's an easy move to take. It's an easy move to give.
Yep.
But also, if you don't know what it feels like to get an elbow to the face, you can pretty much guess. And it's a lot easier to figure out than what it feels like to take a suplex from the top rope. Right? Nobody likes to get punched in the face.
No.
So,
what about a golden topping? Will that ever become a move?
That should. Yeah. The golden topping.
I think when you run out of ideas.
I mean, if you could do it, maybe like a Dynamite Kid headbutt.
I think this
golden
is
topping.
Come on. One of those things that, you know, over the, you know, everyone, like, remember when Tom Petty went back and did Mud Crutch.
Yeah.
It was his band. He always wished he could have done it. And then when he finally got some notoriety, he went and did it. I'm going to go do my Golden Showers open mic tour.
I'm signed up.
Hey, you know what? At this point, which with all you've done and all you've been successful at, it would not surprise me to see the Chris Jericho Netflix comedy special within 5 years.
I did do
stay in your lane, man.
We're taking our jobs.
I did do a couple, actually quite a few, like a spoken word.
Yeah.
The words of Jericho, I call it.
One man show.
And they were basically like, when guys do them, they do Q&As, and I didn't want to do that. I just basically told stories, long form stories. It was kind of a comedy thing, but I'll tell you what, that is hard, hard work to stay engaged. And when people aren't laughing,
stay in that pocket. Yeah. Before we wrap up, I do want to talk about your podcast, which is so good. I want to know, like, what's, again, you were talking just about like branding yourself, but you're so personable, and I feel like you've always been this way. Mm-hmm. So that was such a natural move for you, right? To do that, and all the people you know. Do you have any favorite episodes or chats that you were more, you know, that you walked away from being like, holy shit? Like, because when we first started out, you know, and again, coming up on 500 eps, there's been a handful where like you walk away being like, man, thank God we do this, because that was, I knew it was going to be great, but then there's just certain chunks of the conversation or something the person says. Like I can't remember the name of the person that talked UFOs with you, but that shit is just fascinating to me. And I'm going to immediately go back and listen to that one. But like, were there some that stood out?
I love the concept of podcast because First of all, I know what it's like to get asked the same questions all the time.
Yeah, sure.
I know what a good interview is, and I know what a bad interview is. And a bad interview is someone takes a list of questions and they just read the questions. They're not listening to what you're saying.
Right.
They have an agenda.
Yep.
The best conversations are conversations.
Yeah.
If I met you guys in a bar and we're just shooting the breeze, you don't have a list of questions.
No.
You just talk.
Yeah.
And that's where you really learn about people. So that was cool to me. And the other one was, I get a chance to talk to my friends for an hour, which barely ever happens.
I know, right?
Yeah,
you know that's the great excuse of it
all. And the other one is I get a chance to meet people that I've always wanted to meet and talk to them.
You're welcome. You know? But I think, it's a big deal for you. Yeah,
big fan of the Heat over here.
The big ones for me, I mean, the one that I always wanted was Paul Stanley. Paul Stanley. He's a big Paul Stanley fan. Paul's been on four times now. And the moment I finished with Paul, we were backstage at a KISS show. He took me into the catering area and said to everybody listening, this guy's good. You guys should all do an interview with him.
Oh,
wow.
And then 2 weeks later, I get an email from Gene's people. And then, so
amazing.
One of the reasons why people like it is because it's just a chat. And another great one was Lemmy, where I went to his house. I was told Lemmy's not a good interview. And I've known Lem for years. And he's not a talkative guy if he doesn't want to be.
Sure.
But I walked in there. I set up my rig. He was looking at bass guitars on his computer. I just started talking about kind of guitars. That was Paul McCartney, 1967, and blah, blah, blah. It's a Rickenbacker. And we talked about guitars and didn't even realize that we were on. I never told him that we were on.
Yeah, smart
He's
move.
A pro.
Yeah.
He knows we're fucking talking.
Yeah.
He sees me
set up. Yeah.
And dude, we talked for an hour and a half. We're smoking cigarettes. We're drinking vodka. It's like I hadn't smoked a cigarette in 20 years, but when Lemmy asks you if you want to smoke in his house.
You do.
Yeah.
What, are you going to tell Snoop Dogg you don't smoke weed?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
And at the end of it, it was great. And he goes, that's one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. And that's what Paul said. And that's what a lot of people, Ian Ziering said, like just random people from all over. And so William Shatner was an amazing guest. Vanilla Ice was an amazing guest.
Yeah.
You know,
are people hitting you up now to want to be on?
The UFO guy, SMQ, we don't know his real name. He contacted me via Twitter and said, I have some information that you have to tell the world. My government informant has told me about this. And it's just like all of this stuff about, you know, all of these things. And so when you're getting,
it's amazing
when you're getting called from these people, because I'm known as a paranormal place.
Yeah.
You can come tell your story.
Yeah.
And I always wanted that to be a part
of
it as well.
Dude.
Yeah. Cause you've had a flat earther on where you're like, hey, I'm not going to tell you you're an idiot.
Right.
Let's just hear your story.
Here's a forum to tell me. And if somebody once again is committed to what they're saying, it always makes for a great hour.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather have that conversation with let's say a flat earther who I don't believe, but I'd rather just hear them say why they believe a certain thing than me just be like, you're an idiot.
Right. And I don't believe it either. But when you're finished talking for an hour, you go, you never know.
Maybe.
Because every question I had, he's got an answer.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. Like, I learned from this, you know, all of it's so much fun to me. And also, once again, being creative, who am I going to have on this week? And I've created some of my own shows like Classic Album Clash, where we pit two albums by the same band. They go toe to toe. So a lot of people want to be involved in that. Or I do watch alongs. I did a watch along with Kevin Smith with Bad News Bears. He loves the Bad News Bears.
God.
I love the Bad News Bears.
I saw you had a gal from Fandango doing the Christmas movie
Nikki
preview.
Novak and she's great because she knows everything about movies and I know nothing. So we have good chemistry. So you get these, it's like Johnny Carson. We would have the animal guy would come or Amazing Kreskin would come. Like,
yeah,
his little
all these different people.
Guests.
You've had the great Brad Williams on now twice.
It was very, very good. The last one, we haven't aired it yet.
So it's a full episode then.
Yeah.
It's two half episodes.
My personal favorite, I have to tell everyone to listen to this one. It's the one where you go into a deep dive about the Mandela effect.
Oh yeah.
He was just telling me about this.
It was tripping Adam out because I go, hey, you know that part in The Empire Strikes Back where Darth Vader says, Luke, I am your father? He goes, yeah. I go, that never happened.
Never happened, yeah.
And I literally started to, in my head, be like, yeah, because it was right after he walked out of the, and then Yoda was, what?
Never happened.
Couldn't think of.
And that's what I like, because I have a lot of paranormal contacts, and I was like, do you know about this Mandela effect? Call this lady. Do you know someone that the flat earther? Call this guy. Call this person. So you have this amazing array of all these people with these wonderful stories.
Yeah.
And I think another reason, I wanted my show to be like the Carson show. Like, let's say Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
I'll watch Jimmy Fallon because I like Jimmy. I don't care who the guest is.
Yeah.
Some of them I'm more excited about, but I'll give it a try. So I never have a guest on because the company told me to. Or I never have a guest on because I think it's going to do ratings. I have a guest on because I think they're interesting. If I don't think they're interesting, if I can't get anything out of them, I won't have them on. And Stacey all the time will say, so-and-so wants to go on. I got to pass. What am I going to do with this guy?
Yeah, good move.
You know, what am I do with that guy? And so...
Why'd you point at me when you did that? I already forgot my name.
The worst guest I ever had, Mike Tyson.
No way.
And I've worked with Mike. Mike was my tag team partner for whatever reason. And I was in Hawaii on vacation with my family. We've been trying to get Mike for years. And he's got something to promote. And I drive. We find this crazy studio in some guy's house where I think he's going to throw the lotion in the basket and throw me down the thing. And Mike just did not want to talk. At this one, I actually went in there with some ideas.
Yeah.
I said, this will give me half an hour easy, and then we'll fill in the rest. I get 45 minutes out of him. I was done with my questions in 5 minutes. And I got to fill another, I need 45 minutes.
Why was he so salty? Did you kick him out of Scimitar? Like, why was he so?
Don't know.
I still remember that day like it was yesterday.
We literally were tag team partners. He turned on me and
you were buddies
me out
at that point.
Rock.
Like, you, I mean, yes, good rapport.
We had a whole show.
Yeah.
And he's like, let's talk about this. And he gives like, I mean, that's funny. And that's it.
Oh.
And so finally what I did, and this is what you guys were talking about earlier, you're pros, and sometimes it's easy, and sometimes you got to realize how good are you guys.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, to myself, if he's not going to say anything, I'll fucking talk, and you can listen to me, Mike. And I just talked and talked.
Did you get anything back? Like
nothing. And I remember we were trying to pull quotes for an ad, and we couldn't even pull a quote. Like there was maybe one or two quotes to put in there. But dude, he's got the whole Austin
right.
Tyson, like they turned the whole business around.
Yeah.
Nothing. You know, I didn't think, man, he's funny. Like, that's it. That's all you got.
So, that's your entire experience in wrestling?
Yeah. But here's the thing. Now I can say, whether it was a great show or a shitty show, I can say Mike Tyson was on my show.
Yeah, totally.
And that's all I need. I got the name that I can use in my little blurb for when somebody says, well, what's this? When I approach Keith Richards for the 1500th time and go, hey, who else has been on the show? As any publicist will ask.
Yeah.
Well, this guy, Mike Tyson.
It's a big name, dude. Yeah, carries weight.
Yeah.
Is there a dream guest? Somebody that you've...
Paul McCartney, Keith Richards.
Come on.
Yeah, I'd love to have Ozzy. I don't think Ozzy does podcasts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty obvious. Just throw any of those guys out there and I'd love to have them. But Paul's the big one. And it pisses me off because Hardwick, that son of a bitch, got Paul McCartney. And Chris is a great guy and he's a good friend of mine. It's like, how the fuck did you do that? And he said he just was always trying to get him. A publicist asked him to do a couple other people and said, hey, Paul's available in New York City tomorrow at 6 p.m. Can you be there? Booked a ticket that night, took the ride out of New York, drove straight to his office, did the thing, flew back.
And you know what? There's been guests like that where we were going back and forth with for 3, sometimes 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it just happens. I'm talking to you, John Stamos. You're going to come on the damn podcast.
You know, McCartney was in the audience at the Improv when I got off stage. And so I beelined right past my buddy. Right when I got off, he goes, you know, McCartney was in the room to do your set. And I go, and it was like probably 50 people at the Improv on a Wednesday, right? So not even packed. He's back there with his manager. And so I walk by him to kind of position myself by him so that he'll wave me over and we become best friends.
Yeah, of course.
And he does. He waves me over. He was at him. He goes, great, it's very funny said. Starts quoting a bit back to me, and I go, oh, thanks, Paul. And he goes, sit down, let's have a drink. What are we having? And I'm like, I'll drink anything. I'll do anything to you. Like, well, I'm very vulnerable right now. And so we have margaritas and fucking
this
chill.
This really happened?
Swear to God, dude. Chill and watch the show for 20 minutes. I'm not listening at all to the show because in my head, I'm just like, don't fuck up this moment. Don't fart again hard. I don't know what I'm thinking.
Don't spill your margarita on
Sir Paul. And then finally I get up to leave, and he's going out. And I'm like, I'd be crazy if I didn't throw. And this is how we get, you know, guests at some point. You don't ask, you don't get. And we had some rapport. We hung out for 20, 30 minutes. So I go, Paul, I got this podcast and we start naming some guests and whatever. And I go, if you're around anytime. And he's like, if we're going to actually leave to Japan in the morning. And I go, well, what time? We can come to you. And he goes, it's not going to happen. And I go, dude, but he smiled.
But
he gave me a hug. And he goes, I appreciate you trying. You know, but I was like, dude, he was, you know.
Dude, I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when Ringo got inducted. My cousin and I go every year, and we have a contact that works for Rolling Stone magazine.
Nice.
She can get us onto the floor where all the artists are, but we can't sit anywhere. So we can't stand anywhere, but they technically can't kick us out. So we just walk around.
There you go.
And I noticed when the bands play, after they inducted, everyone stands up. Yeah. And of course, right when I got there, I spot, okay, there's Paul, there's Ringo, there's Olivia Harrison, there's Yoko. They're all standing there. I'll save the Yoko story for another time. So everyone's standing up during Green Day. I'm like, let's go. My cousin Chad's a brother. He was on the cruise. Yeah. So like, he knows what to do. So we walk straight up to the front. You stop for a couple seconds by a table. It's like, dude, how are you, man? And some guy's looking at me, okay, how you doing? Like, who the fuck is this guy? We walk right there. I'm standing right beside fucking Paul and Ringo. Mm-hmm. And it was Green Day. They were doing American Canadian. Hey.
Yeah.
McCartney's going, hey.
He's fucking throwing the hand up.
So then they finish, and Paul has the security guard, and they start walking to the bathroom. Like, this is it, my chance. I walk right beside him, but there's a row of tables in us, so we happen to just meet up at the pass.
There you go.
Oh, hey. Paul at Green Day, they're pretty rocking. I'm like, they're fucking great. Mm-hmm. You having a good time? Yeah, I'm having a good time. I'm like, hey, I see you got a security in front of you. If you need any security guard, I got your back in case any of the ninjas come and try and attack you. And as I'm saying, I'm like, what is it? And he even goes, ninjas? And I'm like, and then I go, like, I just had a high five, Paul. You can high five. So and this whole other thing with Yoko happens. And then we go to the after party where Paul's sitting there. He's talking to Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds like such a nail. And Paul McCartney sitting there with Joe Walsh.
Yeah,
no. Mm-hmm. So Paul, he gets up finally, goes to start eating some cheese. And now, of course, all the zombies start up to him.
Mm-hmm.
And they start asking him for pictures.
Yep.
And I remember on the Hardwick podcast, he says he doesn't like it when people start taking pictures because then he becomes him. He'd rather just talk to you.
Right.
But when you take the picture out, then he's Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
So I noticed that everyone's taking pictures. So I go over to him. And I've done this before with Lars Ulrich and Bill Murray, where I run interference and get them out.
Nice.
When they need help. So I go over to Paul and go, hey, man, if you need any help, you know, getting these people away from you, let me know. And he goes, who are you, man? He goes, are you a security guard or a cameraman? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't think he's a TMZ. He goes, listen. If I have any problems with the ninjas, I'll give you a call.
Oh, my God.
And he walks away, and I'm like, he remembered the ninjas.
Yes. And he even called it back to me.
Yes, he called it back.
Dude, that's a win right
and
there.
That's why he's Sir Paul Frank.
It's going to happen, dude. It's going to happen, man. Yeah. You know
maybe.
The stars will align. Yeah. The guy's not going to stop touring anytime soon. You're going to be in the right city, the right place. You know?
Just played Dodger Stadium.
One of these days, that's what I mean, same with Keith and Mick. One of these days, they'll have something to promote, and somebody will cancel, and someone will get in there.
Or, dude, you'll be in a place where it's like, we just need to hit a guitar center and grab a Zoom and a mic and go to his hotel. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's the thing. And like I said, like I have my show. I think we're over 200 million downloads. So it's a hit. I've got 20 Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. Like whatever you need, I got them.
Right.
You know, but one of these days, it'll happen if it's meant to happen.
So. It will. And when make sure you're subscribed to the podcast, Talk is Jericho. Yeah. So when it does happen, you get it.
And you get to hear Brad Williams in an upcoming episode.
Yes, come on. You will. And make sure that you watch AEW. The new TV show starts October 2nd on TNT. Yes. Watch the great Chris Jericho wrestle. Go see Fozzy when they're on tour. I'm going to go see you when you come back to Southern California and you're opening up for Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
That show I am absolutely going to be at.
Yeah, that show I think is sold out or close to it. I mean, that once again is one of the greatest days of my life. We were in New Zealand on tour with Fozzy. I woke up in the middle of the night with jet lag, and I checked my emails. Got email from Iron Maiden's manager, who I know, Rod Smallwood, and he's like, "Hey, do you want to play a show with us in September?" And I emailed him back, "A show with who?" He goes, "Iron Maiden, you fucking idiot." I'm like, I thought you meant some other shitty band that you're managing. I'm like, yes, we'll play it. I didn't know when, I didn't know where. And then it comes back, it's at the stadium, the Bank of California Stadium.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And then 5 hours later, I get another email from Kevin Smith's producer. Kevin wants you to be in the new Jay and Silent Bob movie, and here's the part. It's like this wicked part. I'm like, this is the greatest professional day of my life.
That's awesome.
Iron Maiden and Jay and Silent Bob, like, tell me.
Wait, it's so you're done. The new one that's coming out?
Reboot, yeah.
Yeah.
That literally, I mean,
come on.
That's unbelievable. Was it the best?
It was great, and it's a great part, and it's awesome. Like, I just to work with
crush.
Him. And it's funny because you watch the credits, and it's, let me get this in order. Chris Hemsworth,
mm-hmm.
Chris Jericho, Val Kilmer.
No fucking way.
This is right after. I'm like, that's not a bad
pedigree.
Exactly.
It's
fucking Val Kilmer.
Exactly.
Because his name's not Chris.
And then
and the cruise is happening when?
January 20th to 24th.
Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, part deux.
Yeah.
Wrestlers, comedians, rock bands.
Yeah, it sounds like so much
paranormal.
Paranormal oh, really? Stuff. It's amazing. I went on the first one. It's the best damn time you're ever going to have in your life. You said in the opening, this is going to be the best vacation of your lives, and it was.
Yeah.
It truly was. And if you go to the cruise, you'll see the kind of people that are going to be on the cruise, so you can do meet and greets. You can watch
it's
wrestling.
A blast. Yeah, ChrisJerichoCruise.com, but you got to hurry because we're 96% sold out.
There you go. Yeah, there's like less than 40 cabins or something.
And I'm a numbers guy. Divide, subtract every single day. Hey, I tell my wife, we're 95.875635% sold out.
Did you do cruises as a kid? Why was that
did the Kiss Cruise. Fozzie played the Kiss Cruise, and I just saw the whole community that it was and how many activities there was to do. You don't have to be a Kiss fan to enjoy it.
No.
And then I said, what am I known for? Rock and roll wrestling. I want to do a cruise. I think I can do it. Took me 3 years to figure out how the fuck to do it. And then here we go.
Home run.
We're getting ready for number two.
Wow. It's not going to stop anytime soon, I bet.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to do a destination vacation, make it a franchise.
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, everyone made money on the first one but me, but that'll change hopefully soon.
It will change, yeah.
It shall. 6%,
baby.
You have an insane schedule. We have insane schedules. I'm so glad this worked out.
Yeah, thanks for making time, man.
So
real honor, dude.
I can repay the favor.
Done and done. Thank you, Chris Jericho.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe and tell your family and everyone you know. But what should I tell them? Well, you can just tell them that Brad Williams and Adam Ray can help you get through the fucking day. Just follow us on Twitter at Funny Brad, and I'm at Adam Ray Comedy. This has been the About Last Night podcast. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's me, Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Meh, what's up, dog? This is your pal Bugs Bunny. Say, I got a question for you. Do you know who has the head of Elmer Fudd and the body of Foghorn Leghorn? Why, that's Adam Ray and Brad Williams. Ain't I a stinker?
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.